Bascom, second by Counselor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby reconvened into regular open session of Council at
6:34.
6:34 p.m. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-572, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held November 5th, 2024. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. Honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years. We pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, work towards truth and reconciliation. Back to the open session, so we'll do roll call once again.
Councillor Marley Haskell.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Councillor Deb Zulak.
Councillor Mike Ackman.
Clerk Administrator Carly Burton.
And Mayor David Moore. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof? Hearing none. Right down to delegations and presentations. We have Belvedere Heights Update, addition of 22 new beds, Don Carmichael and Pam Wing, Belvedere Heights Board of Management. I'll save the resolution until after you finish the presentation, if that's fine with you. And we have the microphones all set up. There's a PowerPoint as well. Good.
Do
all yours.
Do I need two?
Well, we didn't know if we're going to work together.
Yeah, we'll probably separate. I'll do the first bit. And then Don will do the second. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Moore and Councillors, for giving us the opportunity to update you on Belvedere Heights and its 22-unit build. It's been a whirlwind time since April, and we've worked very hard, and we're continuing to work very hard. But just to start out, there is a PowerPoint presentation, which I guess is over on the screen there. The first one you're looking at, I just want to say, is the entrance of the new Belvedere Heights on the west side. So it looks the same as it did, except it's come out a little bit farther. So we're out farther and closer to the road. That's basically the entrance from the west side. Next slide. And this is the entrance from the south side, which would be coming around as you drive. We drive around the corner. And on your right, you'll see the life lease units. And the addition is out to the front there. The next slide. The new main entrance is down on the lower level, and it will be the entrance basically for admin and not a lot of visitors, because most of the visitors will be coming in a different parking lot. So the only other piece, before I show you the parking, is I love to show this one because it's brings up the interior decorator. The colors that they're going to use in the new home area. And they've taken a look at, as good old Georgia Bay, and they've taken a look at the water and the sky and the sunsets and the rocks, and really come up with a nice design for this particular home area. This will be a 22-bed home area, which is a different home area than the others. The next slide will show you exactly what this new home area will look like. If you look at the property line, it shows you where we have come out from where we were before. So we're coming quite close to the property line now, and we've gone to the town to make sure that we can make that happen. The other new units are the 12 units, which are sort of 1, 4, 3, 5, 6, they don't seem to go in order for some reason. And then the ones on the right, which will be new, all new, these will be all new. The balance will be renovated. If you'll remember, the administration was on the main floor, and we're moving administration down to the basement and putting the new units on the main floor, which certainly gives those persons who are going to be living there a much nicer view and opportunity for their home. So we're very pleased with that new design that came out. We were originally going to put them in the basement, and somebody said basements isn't great. Not for seniors, it's okay, that's what we've always said. For those of us who were in university, we went to the basement, but not when you reach the end, you should have a lovely home. And this is a home. It's not someone that's working 9 to 5, so it made good sense to move it up to the main floor. So that's what we've done, and that is the design. This next slide shows you the whole outline of the home, and you'll see in the line the area of the renovations and the new piece. And what we're looking at is one of the really important things was parking. As if you know the area, it's quite a tight area. They've made Belvedere Avenue one way. When I lived on Belvedere Avenue, it was two ways, but it's now one way. And the obvious concern is that it is in a residential area. So we wanted to make sure that with adding 22 units, we didn't add huge amounts of parking issues. So you'll see that we put new staff parking over on the far right. It says new staff parking, 23 new staff parking spots. And that will make quite a difference because most of the entrance will be at Willow, not at the admin entrance that I showed you. And the admin entrance is the entrance that's closest to some of the residential homes. And so we figure that will work really, really well. It also does give us a lot more parking than what we've had. If you ever go up there, it's very hard to find a place to park anywhere near that's close. So we're quite happy that this will be staff and some visitors, but there will be other visitors parking. So we've looked at the parking and we figured that we will cut down on the traffic but with this additional parking lot, so that will be great. So I will turn that over to Don to do the really exciting stuff that's called finance.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks. Well, thank you, Kathy. So you see, it's a pretty exciting build that I'm taking. So the exciting stuff, I guess, in terms of what it's going to cost us. So anyway, you can see here that we're looking at about a $13.4 million total project. We're still at a Class B estimates. We hope to see the Class A estimate, almost Class A this week, but these are Class B estimates from several weeks ago now. So the hard cost, the construction cost, around 10.2. Ministry requires a 5% contingency, so that's the 5%, the 500,000. Soft costs are basically the permits and the engineering and architect costs, around $1 million. Again, contingency is required, 2 to 3%. IO requires this, actually, Infrastructure Ontario, and so we set that at 3%. HST, we have a question mark. We should be eligible for 100% refund, but we're not sure we'll get that, but we should be, given that we're building new homes under the federal initiative. But there's a large renovation component as opposed to a new build, so there is some issue whether we'll be eligible or not, so that's why it's still in here with a question mark on it. And so if we're lucky, that's $200,000 that won't be a part of the $13.4 million. FF&E is furniture, fixture, and equipment. And we've got a generous contingency in there at $900,000. And the interest at 5% is the construction interest over the next 2 years as we build. If we don't pay that down as we go, Infrastructure Ontario will allow us to roll that into the debenture, the 25-year debenture. And in the small right-hand corner at the bottom, the eye test is approximately 19,000 square feet. And you see with the approximately 3,800 square feet is that new build that Pam was talking about in terms of those 12 rooms to the west and north of the existing facility. And then the renovation on the ground floor is 8,600, and the lower floor, 6,512, will be moving the chapel, the activity areas, meeting rooms, and administration will all move down into that lower area, which is largely an auditorium now. And community support services is there. We'll be actually moving out to a new location in the old Shoppers on James Street. So that also helps reduce the volume of traffic there. Anyway, next slide, please. So this is the revenue side, and there's two components to this, and this is largely revenue from the ministry. So the initial one is the initial upfront cash. Every home that's approved to be built in the province gets $250,000 planning grant. No matter what size you are, you get the same amount of money. The development grant is approximately $19,000 per bed and change. So that's where the $392 comes from with our 22 beds. The reason we were in such a hurry to do all of this was to be eligible for the $35 top-up, which we'll talk a little bit more about in detail a little bit. But for those of us who are non-for-profit homes, we can convert $15 of that to upfront money. So rather than taking $15, which would be about $3 million over 25 years, you can take $1.78 million upfront. And that's what we are opting to do. So that would give us $2.4 million in cash upfront funded by the ministry. And as you know, we're asking for the $700,000 back from all of you kind folks that you received in 2001. And that would give us a little bit over $3.1 million in cash upfront to offset the $13.4 million estimated cost. So that's the first component, the cash component. The second component is the annual construction funding subsidy. Again, all homes, in our case, we're small, rural, greater than 96 beds, so we're eligible for the $20.78, $0.75, so the $21.50 basically. So that's where the $35 becomes so valuable, because essentially without it, we would be eligible for $4 million over 25 years. With the $35, we're eligible essentially for $11 million over the 25 years, of which we're opting to take some of it up front, right, the $3 million up front. But that's a huge windfall in terms of our ability to get that kind of funding from government. So with our ability to take the $20 residual from after we take the $15 up front cash, we have the $41 per day, which is about $333,000 per year, guaranteed for the next 25 years. The additional new revenue will be, all of the 22 rooms will be private, and the private differential will be approximately $185,000, assuming about a 97% occupancy rate. Next slide, please. So this sort of brings the two sets of numbers together, the $13.4 million cost, the $3 million in upfront cash, contribution of your contribution and the governance for $10.2 million approximate estimate for the IO 25-year debenture. The IO rate, we've got there 4.35%, about 2 months old now. I think we got that in September, we got that quote. Be lower, what really matters when it's in 26, right? The fall of 26 is when we convert the construction loan into the 25-year debenture, and that's when this formula will kick in. And so based on this current pro forma, we have the $674,000 expense. We have the $333,000 funding subsidy. We have the shortfall, as you see there in red. And the really good news is that by adding these 22 beds to make it 123-bed home, we have significant economies of scale because we don't have to add more laundry staff and administration staff to manage the additional 23 beds, so we can generate a significant surplus. And so we're actually using space now on our first floor that's never actually generated revenue for us in the past. So that's really that's one of the contributions to our challenges, like with the levy, et cetera, in the past. So as you can see, we're fairly confident that we will have a surplus position so we have a little bit of room here in case if there are any surprises. You never know when there are surprises. We think we have a fairly contingency built in. The price has been fairly stable, the estimates over the last few months. But you only know when you get the final bill is when you really know what it costs. Next slide. So we've been really fortunate to be able to work with Infrastructure Ontario, and thanks to Councillor Wing and Carly to step forward to make it very easy for us, because it's very easy for IO to lend money directly to you, to us. We have to go through a ton of hoops. There's a 50-point checklist that I mentioned, and I give the one example of an environmental assessment, and you know you can't get that done in a month. Year maybe, phase one, right? Maybe do it in 3 or 4 months, which we never get it done in a month. And we were desperately trying to meet this November deadline for to be eligible for the $35 per diem top-up. So it's really great that we've been able to do that. You can see on the bottom, there's not a lot of difference between the interest rate, again, that updated interest rate between 4.25% and 4.65% for us, but the big difference is the debt service ratio, where for municipality it's a 1, for us it's a 1.2. We would actually have to find another $1.2 million to satisfy Infrastructure of Ontario's requirement, and they don't consider the economy of scale. It's a cash-based concept. The economy of scale does not include in the infrastructure calculation, in IOE calculations. And you've seen this before. This is the monies that were returned, and Pam had sent out a letter to all of us asking for a return. You see, your share back then was 6.77%, and $47,000 approximately is your share, and you see everyone else's share there. Okay, so this, as I mentioned before, the $35 per diem top up. So if you step back for a minute, you may recall on April 5th we got the letter saying no to the Campus of Care, essentially. And we had three choices: close Belvedere, stay status quo, or we could add the beds we were given 2 years ago, which, of course, we opted to do that. You all agreed, because all of you, all eight municipalities, passed a resolution in June, right, supporting that we do this. Thank you for that. And you can see these are all the deadlines that we had to meet, so we only found out about this on April 12th. And so we had 2 weeks basically to make that April 30th deadline in terms of the preliminary plans and preliminary funding, which included a letter of intent from the bank. So we had to move mountains to get the financial stuff done, get the funding formulas done, get TD Bank to agree to do this, and they did it. Kudos to them, with basically 1 week turnaround to do that. And then we met the May 31st deadline, and then you can see we're heading towards this magical November 8th deadline, which has now been pushed out a little bit. Next slide, please. Okay. So this is a sort of the project milestone. There's a lot of dates here, but don't worry too much about that. So what happened with the April 30th deadline? What we did was we basically resubmitted the work that was done in November 2019. So the architects only had a week as well, because this is a surprise. I forgot to mention, the architect who had done the plan in 2019 was out of business. So we approached the firm that did the Campus of Care, Amber Salvages Group in Sudbury, asking them to fit us into their current schedule with zero notice. And again, they turned this around in a week. Well, I guess it wasn't too difficult. They do magic, so they had no problem doing magic. And so the proposal on April 30th was for 24 beds in the basement, taking the plans. And the plans we had were three pieces of paper. That's it, no electronic files. And we have to convert those with measuring the dimensions and figure out what the room sizes were. That's where we're at back then. So what happened was early May they came on site, realized quickly that we couldn't do 24, it would be 22, and then as Pam said, it made no sense building in the basement. It made much more sense upstairs, and it's a lot easier. So we contacted the ministry. Mid-May, we went back with 22 beds on the first floor. They thought we were coming back to talk about the deficiencies with the 24 beds on the basement. But they were happy with this, and that's where all this flurry of activity into June to finally get a brand new plan in place, right from scratch, into the ministry for approval. They took most of July to look at this. Vacation, of course, gets in the way. So August 6th, we got the preliminary plan. 2 weeks later, we submitted the working drawings, right, the blueprints, that would be the basis for the evaluation, for the final evaluation for the ministry. Next one, please come. So we thought we'd hear from them on October 4th. We heard from them on October 8th. There's a number of flurry of activities that are going on at the moment. And so we're still, a lot of these dates have slipped at the moment where we are, one of the good news stories is the ministry is entertaining extensions. They have granted extensions already to other homes, we've been told. And we've got really great vibes for our project. They're really happy with the work. So we're expecting we're going to get some consideration that we won't have to meet the November 30th deadline, which means we would still be eligible for the $35 top-up with their blessing to go beyond the November 30th date. So we're very confident. It's not over until they actually get the letter, but that request was set in about 2.5 weeks ago. Next slide, please. So the site plan and the building permits under review by the town. The town has been really helpful. They've been expediting things, very, very helpful. Carly and Infrastructure Ontario are working on the loan agreement. We hired a construction management firm to manage the project. They are ready to issue the tenders when we get a go-ahead. One of the things that for the November 8th deadline included this thing called the approval to the construct package. As you can see, the long laundry list here of some of the things that we need to do. The land evaluation just came in today. Licensing review is done, but we haven't heard the results. Insurance is done. And then the site plan and building permit we expect to get by December 10th from the town. And then the construction schedule and stuff is coming now. And of course, the tendering process and the results will not be ready until well into November. The other thing we are considering is an early works project, adding those 23 spaces that Pam talked about in the northwest corner. And we expect actually to get approval from the town this week to actually move ahead with the site plan to do that. And so then, of course, we've been asking your support to support the construction funding loan initially. And next slide. And that's what this resolution is to support that. And what we will also be asking all of you to do is to support the 25-year debenture when it comes to that. But that's a two-year window for that. So at the moment, Carling is prepared to both. In fact, Carling has two bylaws, one to take on the construction loan and to take on the debenture as well. So at the moment, they would be on for 100% of the debenture. But they passed that bylaw as well, but IO would amend the amount depending on how many other municipalities pass that same bylaw, which we will send to you in due course. But you'll be hearing one step at a time in terms of this. So this is a draft resolution for you to consider in terms of supporting us entering into an agreement with Carling. So we would paper an agreement with Carling to make sure they got all the funds available, anything that was needed to pay Infrastructure Ontario on a monthly basis, or the interest on the construction loan, which would be at the 5%. That could be reduced as well, but at the moment it's 5%. Anyway, that's the end of the presentation, I think. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Well, might be questions. Well, the council has any, and then I'll open it up to the public as well. So. Councillor Ryan?
I noticed that the resolution, sorry, it's not up there anymore, but refers to up to 24 beds, and I was wondering if that would potentially cause a problem now that it's 22, that's all. But
Well, we left it that way because that's what we had said initially. There's no problem with the ministry. They clarify that it's 22 beds, so we can say it's 22 beds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other questions from council? I just wanted to get my head around this, not so much the Infrastructure Ontario loan, but the debenture that comes later and the costs to the township then. I realize that the one amount you mentioned, the 40-some thousand, and then when after the two-year period, are we involved in a debenture then at that point as well?
Yes, and we would like all eight municipalities
right.
to sign up. And essentially, it's really a guarantee. It's essentially a loan guarantee, but no cost, because we have the pro forma is that it's not going to cost anything. We're going to self fund this without levy support, based on our pro forma. Right, we have that surplus that we're predicting. So essentially, it's just a requirement that the owners back Belvedere. With that support, and so it's a contingent liability with low risk, essentially from an audit like an accounting perspective, because we're not expecting that it's going to cost anything, given the funding structure that we have in place and the cost controls that we have in place with the economy of scale and other things that we're looking at in terms of see if we can do a better job than that. That's just an initial estimate. Economy scale and see if we can actually do better than that. So that's a big mission for us, is to keep that cost down and protect that levy.
See, my mind tends to wander back over a decade ago with the life lease when they were first proposed, and it wasn't going to cost the townships anything. We found out that wasn't the case. that there was still the levy. Actually, we were told that once the life lease goes in, your levy will disappear. It never happened, so we're a little shy. That's all we're saying. It's not going to cost us anything, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, and I know you and I have had sort of this conversation in the past, so
yeah.
I just can't understand how anyone, given the way this life lease is structured, how they could possibly have eliminated the levy. Because the only money we ever made is when one is sold, there's a 10%, up to a 10% redemption fee. But it's the only thing, even if a long-term care home could totally absorb the cost of life lease, you know, all of the costs of maintaining it, there's still not enough money to eliminate the levy. I mean, the fundamental issue with the levy is we built a home with 19% private rooms rather than 60%, which was the rule, which was what the government's expecting. So we had to make up that $200,000 worth of revenue. We also built a sprawling campus, horizontally, not vertically, right? That's another $200,000 in heating outside, essentially. Right. So there, so if you may recall, your levy was around $400,000, $450,000 for a decade. That's the two major components of that levy, which is the structural problem of how 21 Belvedere was built, with all those semi-private rooms, not enough private rooms, and the ranch-style construction design, right, which makes it very inefficient for cleaning and for heating and that kind of stuff. Right. And carpets, all carpets as well, right, which is, again, not the standard for long-term care.
And a good salesperson back then. Councilor Zulak.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so are you? Can you just make it clear, Don, that when it comes time for the debenture, our levies won't go up?
No.
Okay.
That's our job, Debbie.
No, I know. I just want to make
sure
that's clear, right? That the levies will not go up.
Yeah.
Councilor Kekman?
I think that the levies won't go up, and that is totally based on if the residual annual $341,000 funded by Belvedere Economy of Scale operating savings estimated at $439,000. So as long as you can generate that $439,000 annually economies of scale, the levies won't go up.
Correct. Because what you're looking at there, we've got the $98,000 surplus. Right, as well, and we also generating annual surpluses on the operating side as well. So at the moment, what we will do is we'll probably fix the levy at $1 million. We won't reduce it if we can. We will build up reserves because our reserves are lower than they. When we returned that $700,000, we were over the allowable reserve limit. We were only allowed to keep $1.6 million, and we had $2.3 million. That's because the old Long-Term Care Act only allowed us to keep 15% of our revenues in reserve. The Fixing Long-Term Care Act increased that to 25%. So now we can keep $3 million in reserves rather than the 1.6. So we're at 1.4 now. So we can build that back up to 3 million and be consistent within the legislation. And that then also, Councillor, the Captain would give us the room for some flexibility if there's any deficit situation, rather than applying that to an increase in the levy.
But you would only have money to put in reserves if there is a surplus in one of the, say, operating budget.
Correct.
So this $439,000 per year, you're estimating, so there's nothing fixed that says that you're guaranteed that you're going to be generating this economy of scales revenue of $439,000 per year.
Yeah, most of it is real because it's a fixed funding formula from the ministry. And for example, if we're getting $360,000 in annual income for accommodation, and we only have to add $60,000 worth of equipment and staff to manage because we don't need a new administrator, we don't need any of that support. So that's $300,000 of surplus because of the economy of scale that we get that $20 a day funding from the. It's all funded by envelope, right? There's a nursing envelope. We're going to have some surplus in there. We're going to have significant surplus in the professional services envelope because we won't be adding more staff to serve those 23 beds. Only more equipment, supply costs for the staff. And then, like I say, the administration side is relatively fixed cost and the average cost that we're going to get from the government for that. And at the moment, we're running a $400,000 surplus for this year. So that's nothing on top of it, on top of this performer. The performer, of course, won't kick in until 2026, when we actually have the 23 beds up and operating, or 2027, I guess, by the end of 2026, when we have the 23 beds up and operation. The full performer won't kick in until 2027. Is that okay, Councilor?
Yeah, thank you.
Now, when you did the public presentation, there was an individual questioned, I guess, about properties being close to the entrance, and that there might be I don't know what the backlash might be there, but is there a potential that these dates can't be met because it could be tied up by somebody saying that no, we're not going to permit this?
We don't think so. There was a meeting today, and they were all invited. One showed up. And they were happy. I mean, we have been communicating with them. The interesting issue is that with CSS relocating, the actual volume of traffic on that entrance will go down. The current estimate from the little traffic study we've done is 30 to 40 per day. It's going to go down to 20 to 30 because the CSS traffic, the Meals on Wheels traffic, the exercise program traffic will not be there. Well, some exercise programs will still be there, but the daily Meals on Wheels traffic will not be there, and visitors and some other stuff at the CSS. So, it basically will be more of an admin entrance. It's parking all day, essentially, right? As Pam explained, visitors coming around the other side because that's where the elevator is, and then LifeLease will actually park up on where the current main entrance is. So all LifeLease will be consolidated there. That's in that. That's perhaps a little bit hard to read the numbers on that slide, but that's and so LifeLease is happy. We had the nearest neighbor had a meeting today. They're happy with that, and so far, we think it's okay, but we'll find out tonight at the town of Perry Sound where our next stop.
Okay. Councilor Kagan.
So you said you're operating at a $400,000 surplus at this moment?
Yes, but
in August 28th, you were operating at a $152,000 surplus?
Yes, there's been a lot of one-time monies coming in, and so part of the issue is how much of that is actually going to be surplus versus expense for programs. So, and the other thing is we have some capital items. So to be honest with you, Councillor, until the auditors take a look at it, it's just an estimate for now. And last year we actually, had a very large surplus. We had a predicted low surplus. We had a large surplus once the capital costs came in. So it's just a rough order of magnitude now, and we'll have to wait for the audit to determine what that is. But we certainly will have a surplus as opposed to a deficit. The magnitude is really difficult to estimate right now because it has fluctuated, to your point, over the last little while. And we've been lucky that our agency staff costs have been relatively low, but we've got COVID again, and so that will put cost pressures on us we've had two COVID outbreaks over the last few weeks, so has the hospital and so has Lakeland. So we're all in this together. That will have some cost pressure as well. I'm sorry, we'll have to wait and see here. March, April, what the real surplus is.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, speaking of being all in together, I'm just wondering about administration. I know that the health services, I guess, has taken over the hospital for a period of time. Is that going back now to just administration from Belvedere? At what point? Or I'm just wondering, the people you have in there, it seems like at the meetings anyway, you have a number of health services people attending those meetings. And I'm not sure whether it's Lakeland tied in as well, but is it just going back to administration by Belvedere?
We're going to be holding a meeting with you very soon.
Okay.
To talk about that topic and sort of a closed session kind of discussion.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know.
Oh, no, don't apologize. Good question.
Yeah.
And, so we'll talk about that. Karen?
Yeah, for sure.
Councilor Kagan?
So another debenture that the Belvedere is, or line of credit that you're trying to obtain is $4.275 million for the purchasing of LifeLease units.
Yes.
So how is that going to be funded? So this is going to be additional cost to pay back this this debenture. So where is that? Where is the funding for that coming from?
Because it's been a long time. About a year ago, we made a presentation on the funding formula for that. So essentially, it's coming from the surplus income from the rental units. We have 5 rental units now that generate over $1,000 a month surplus. And the model we put together is that the cost of the interest expense from the TD line of credit would be covered off by the surplus revenue from the rental seniors' rental apartments once they're purchased back. The ones that were purchased back. The other issue, now that we've switched to TD Bank, we no longer have a line of credit. We only had a $300,000 line of credit with Scotiabank, which was like 20 years ago, right? And so the other thing about the line of credit is we have flexibility to use it for other things other than life lease purchases. So if there is some kind of major capital emergency, like major roofing problem or something, we don't have to levy it. We would have the flexibility in dipping into an operating line. Every business needs an operating line. All municipalities have an annual operating line. And so we need that as well. So it's not just our intention is to use it for life lease as required. And of course, we don't have the same urgency anymore, right? That we're going to be in place. But if people can't sell it on the open market and we can rent it out and generate that surplus income, because at the moment we are building a nest egg with a surplus income, with no expense. So that's a good business model to help again offset costs, right, and help protect the levy. So in a way, it's generating money that we can't turn it into an exact profit center, the mayor that you were talking about, but it's a way of actually making life lease pay for itself. Right? Mm-hmm.
So it's generating $1,000 per month of the 6 units.
The 5 units.
Five units.
Yes, sir.
So 5,000 a month, 60,000 a year. So so what is that paying off of this line of credit? Is it just the interest, or is this the principal and interest?
Well, the way we have the option, the way it was originally, we have the option to have it only a line of credit, and once it builds up, we can convert it to a term loan. We have that flexibility. The original proposal that we presented was once it became 2 million, it would be converted to a term loan. And the revenue model, we can buy up to 9 units with absolutely no problem at all, given the money that we already have in place. So from that model, it's a sound model, Councilor.
I'm just doing the math here, 60,000 a year, and over 10 years, 600,000. Over 25 years, 101.2 million. So it's somewhere someone has to pay for this $4.27 million. Generating that $60,000 a year is not paying for this line of credit.
If we were to buy back all of the units, it would take us 9 to 10 years to get up to the $4 million. We'll probably never need $4 million at the current situation. But that's why it's a long period of 2 units per year turning over in terms of buying them back at, the average price has been about $220,000. So it's a long way to, so that's where the $4.275 million was buying back all of the units at roughly that cost, and that will take quite a while before that, if that ever happened. And some may still sell on the open market. It's not a lot of demand, but it's not zero, but it's almost zero. But there is one person on the list right now that wants to purchase a life insurance. So it is a possibility in the future. So we it's hard to predict now, given that we've had such a major change in the way we're doing business. But anyway, we're a long way off before we ever have a $4 million line of credit and usage. And so it should be a revolving line for the next few years. And we might not even need it for several years, depending on the situation. Like I said, it just gives us the flexibility so we would not have to come back to you for
one quick question on campus of care. That's not being explored any further?
The ministry has deferred to campus of care indefinitely. And so that wasn't our choice. That was basically...
Right. I'm just wondering, with all this money being put into Belvedere now, I mean, would there even be a consideration to do a campus of care?
Oh, sure. Because, I mean, we're still 100 beds short. We still have a two-year wait list, over a two-year wait list. So I mean, the last calculation is old, but it was about 150 beds short. So over 300 in the district, and we were trying to estimate the split between west and east. They didn't give us the split. And we were estimating it's about 150 for us. Because Castle Home got some new beds, right? They're in the works, right? So we were figuring that there would be probably about 150 beds shortfall for us. So 22 beds is far, even if that's only 100, if the the ministry, we're still short beds, and so the campus of care model of building on existing space at the Westbury Southern Health Center, attaching it to Lakeland, is still a viable model. Mm-hmm. It's a question of funding.
And how many beds would that create?
The proposal was 160 beds.
So then, if...
But that was replacing the Belvedere Council, right? So I'm assuming that the ministry would not approve anything more than about 96, I'm guessing.
So Belvedere, with the new addition from that, would be in existence for many years to come?
Part of the problem, the reason it's only 20 years old was one of the reasons why the ministry didn't want to close it. They want to see 40 to 50 years before they actually rebuild. We're considered an A bed, like the best beds in the business, and they haven't got a policy yet to fund that. So basically after 40, 50 years, they're going to start downgrading these beds. And they may be new building standards. They're always changing them. So they may end up coming with some new standard. Like the COVID Commission recommended two corridors. So you have a sort of a public corridor and a staff corridor, so if they mandated that, then all nursing homes would have to be redesigned to accommodate that kind of model that some hospitals have. The freezing concept in hospitals has that concept. And so if they had introduced that at some point in time, then that would be the new standard, for example. That would then create the need for new nursing home design beds. Who knows if they'll ever do it? I kind of doubt it, because they don't want the expense. Right? And then the other thing you have to be really careful about is, when will the age bulge stop? Because if you're building a home for 50 years, what is the age profile looking like 50 years from now, in terms of those of us who are still going to be here when we're 200?
Yeah.
Right? 150. Because the, by 2040, the pediatric population is starting to grow again. Right? And so that's a good indication of the starting a shift in the population dynamic after those baby boomers are sort of pushing up the east. And so.
Thank you.
One quick question again, just to be assured of the visitor parking. That's not going to be a problem, because obviously you're adding some more beds, and visitor parking is often being concerned. I look at the diagrams, and it looks like staff parking, administration. I know there's some for visitors, but is the visitor parking really being increased at all, or are we just going to fight for a spot?
Oh, no, it's being increased, because staff are parking there now at the Willow entrance, as well as three or four lifelies, so that there's about 22 visitors a day. And there's, how many spots were on that? So, I mean, screen's not yet.
23?
23,
yes.
No, sorry, my apologies.
Go ahead.
13 visitor spots there, yeah. And there's parking on the street, as well as veterans parking for visitors.
Right, okay.
Right? So, yes, and the CSS has 5 spots.
Okay.
Right? That will not be there, plus other people that drop in for Meals on Wheels and visitors to program for CSS. So that... So the overall traffic will probably not increase that much, because you need for every 4 beds, you need 1 parking spot. That's the ministry rules. So we're adding 20 beds, we only need 6 or 7 new parking spots, right? So we've more than accommodated that.
I guess not everybody's visiting at the same time. But
right. Well, and there is a concentration, right?
Yeah.
There's not too many visitors at 3 in the morning.
Right.
But yes. Anyway.
No, that's great. And I know you have to get to Perry Sound, you said. So, Any questions from the audience or anybody on Zoom as well? Okay, well, thanks very much. And we have a couple of resolutions here, so whether you want to wait to hear those or whether you have to get to Perry Sound. It's a
well, thanks for your time. A lively conversation.
Great. Thank you. Resolution 24-573, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from Secretary Treasurer Darren Carmichael and Board Chair Pam Wing of the Belvedere Heights Board of Management, providing Council and the public with an update to the addition of 22 beds at Belvedere Heights. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-574, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Cuttinger. Whereas in June 2024, all eight municipal owners of Belvedere Heights long-term care home endorsed the proposal to add up to 24 new long-term care beds. And whereas the opportunity to receive a $35 per diem construction funding subsidy needed to fund the new build is predicated in part on securing financing by the November 8, 2024 deadline. And whereas Infrastructure Ontario provides an option to secure construction funding in October 2024 prior to the November deadline without an upfront guarantee from all eight municipalities, and whereas the Township of Carling has agreed to enter into agreement with Infrastructure Ontario to secure the construction loan on behalf of Belvedere Heights, and whereas Belvedere Heights will enter into a loan agreement with the Township of Carling guaranteeing payment of all financial obligations to Infrastructure Ontario for the borrowing costs. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby endorse the Belvedere Heights proposal to enter into a loan agreement with the Township of Carling to support a two-year construction funding loan with the guarantee that Belvedere Heights will provide funds from operating reserves as required in advance of all Infrastructure Ontario payment terms. Discussion? This one doesn't go as far as the debentures, for the sounds of it.
Mm-hmm. No.
That would have to be looked at later. But well, we haven't seen this agreement with Carling, but Carling is taking it on, and Belvedere, we're told, it will be supporting this so that it won't be anything, any levy for the municipality. You asked that directly.
Okay.
And it's just, it's hard to fathom a $13 million bill. Nothing more required from the municipalities. It sounds good, but
doesn't sound possible. But we'll see. Well, I'm sure the levy will end up going up, right?
Yes.
But didn't I ask him that? That will our levy go up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they have it in writing here that the levy will not go up. It's in writing, so
I don't know what else we can do.
Okay, any further discussion? No, call the question. All those in favor? No, opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-575, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby approved the minutes of the October 15, 2024 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Hearing none, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-576, moved by Councillor Zulak, second by Councillor Kekkonen. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the draft conditions met letter to the Planning Board for consent application number B07/2024, Zandberg, and further authorize the letter to be signed and sent to the Planning Board. Discussion? Just a quick refresher, that's the application was up in Grail. I'll put you on the spot here.
You know what, I can't even think of
okay.
Where it was. but it was fairly simple. They just needed 911 adjusting. That's been done.
Yeah. Yeah, very few conditions. Call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Are we in the right order here?
No, 15.2.
Okay, so see, I don't have.
This is right.
Yeah. And that was the agenda that went public, 15.2.
Yep.
Okay. So we have resolution 24-577, moved by Councilor Ryan, second by Councilor Haskell. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of Keller does hereby receive the application to amend the Township's zoning bylaw for the property legally described as Concession 12, Part Lots 33 to 35, Registered Plan 42R7768, Parts 5, 6, and 7, and Registered Plan 42R21796, Part 1, where the requested amendment seeks to change the zoning designation of the subject property from Inland Development, RU, to Special Provision SP 16.80 to permit a detached garage as a primary use on a property without a main building or structure while adhering to all other requirements of the Inland Development RU zone. And further, that the application is hereby deemed complete. Discussion? I had some questions on it, but I don't know whether this is the time or whether we do it later, but I just wanted clarification on that, and I guess there's nobody at this point to talk about it, but the ownership is the same person that owns the one piece of property and the property across the road?
So the applicant is the vacant land in McKellar. The agent is related to the applicant, and their cottage is in McDougal.
Okay, so this just deals with the property that's in
McKellar, correct?
Yeah.
But the way the McDougal property is tied in is that's the main family cottage with very little area to build a shed or a garage. So they're wanting to build a garage on the McKellar property to facilitate the cottage on the McDougal side. But the ownership is different for each property.
And the property we're discussing is a conveyable lot. It is a solid lot.
Yes.
Which will have an accessory building on it without the primary dwelling.
Yes, the purpose is to not have a single family dwelling built on that property. They would just have the sole accessory building being a garage for storage.
And I'm just wondering, the way it looked on the drawing, so they are in separate ownerships, okay. So
yes.
I just wondered, it wasn't the same then as the Kodiak Road one where it was it was going to be changed. I don't know whether you recall that one. The property on the lake was actually going to have the property across the road, and it wouldn't be directly across from it. It was going to have to go down the road and across.
Yeah.
So the same type of thing here, they would have to traverse McKellar-Ferguson or Lockhart Road and to join the other piece of property. Access it. I'm just wondering, as I look through too, and I know this came up before with the Reed application in Island View Drive, whether it should be called a garage, and I notice they have both, a garage slash storage, and according to our bylaws, if the garage should just be called a storage, with the changing, and this is when it goes to the planner sort of thing, the changing of the wording so that the storage can be increased in size, but they're talking about an 800 square foot building, I think. And our storage building has limitations in the bylaw, but I'm wondering if that could be looked at. Because as was pointed out to us with the Island View one, if you do an accessory building, it has to be on the same lot as the primary dwelling. And I know this is going to be an exception, but I'm wondering, since a garage is an accessory building, if it shouldn't be called a storage building instead of a garage. Not that it would make that much difference, but it would follow the bylaw a little more closely, I think.
I could ask the planner.
Yeah, I'm thinking that.
Okay.
so much in the application, but in the form itself, that's run through the township. And I'm wondering if that could be, it says updated 2022, January 10th, 2022, and I'm wondering if it could be updated as of November or December 2024, so that we could get Ontario Municipal Board replaced with Ontario Land Tribunal through the document. Any further discussion on that?
So this is just deeming the application complete, and there'll be a planning report to follow?
Correct, and the public meeting will be scheduled for December 3rd at 6:30 p.m., and I'll send notices out most likely next week.
Okay, thank you.
I looked this one over to see if, because once you deem it application complete, of course, the clock starts. But it didn't seem to be in the deer yard area. It didn't look like any other studies had to be done. And whether people, they'll come forward perhaps at that point. But that always seems to be a point of contention when you deem it complete, because then everything starts in motion. And so just make sure the council is comfortable with that, that everything is, all the studies that you require are all talked about or not required. As long as they know.
I have had preliminary discussions about this application with the planner, and they didn't suggest any studies at this time.
Now, is it clear? I just wanted to make sure that we cover ourselves. I think it was on the actual document itself for the rezoning that all costs are borne by the applicant. I just wanted to make sure we run into that before with any costs that come up, and like our planning report, for instance.
Yes.
That's going to be covered by the applicant?
Yeah, I met with the agent and her husband and went through all the costs and what they're responsible for.
Okay, and they've signed the document to that effect, okay. Any further questions, discussion? All the questions, all those in favor? None opposed, carried. Resolution 24-578, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zubak. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the September 25th, 2024 meeting of the North Bay Prairie Sound District Health Unit Board of Health. Any discussion of those minutes? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-579, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the minutes of the October 24th, 2024 meeting of the Town of Prairie Sound EMS Advisory Committee. Any discussion of those minutes? Hearing none, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-580, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the September 25th, 2024 meeting of the District of Prairie Sound West, Belvedere Heights, Board of Management. Discussion of those minutes? Hearing none, call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Resolution 24-581, moved by Councillor Ryland, second by Councillor Haskin. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of Township of McKellar to hereby receive the budgetary T-2024-8 budgetary control report for the 9 months ending September the 30th, 2024 from Treasurer Roshan Cantia for information purposes. Discussion? Is your hand? Oh, there he is. He's big of him and he appears. That's like that Beetlejuice thing, isn't it? You have to be careful. Very good summary. We appreciate that. And
thank you.
All the accolades, it seems like very positive. But there might be some questions from council. And,
sure.